Okay, so that is the ending of the retreat ceremony. It's a, to me, one of the, in kind of Buddhist culture, Buddhist monastic culture, actually throughout the culture, to me it's one of the really special ceremonies, even though it's very, very short, I think short and sweet is nice, as it is a, on its meaning level, of it's an asking of forgiveness and a mutual asking and forgiving of forgiveness, and that is a really important, essential way of living together. It's also, say, a traditional way of, say, showing respect to elders, and but a way of expressing respect and gratitude to our mentors and those who help to guide us, encourage us, give example to. And it's used throughout the year, but I feel it's a really essential part of how we can live together as a human society, that sense of mutual respect, mutual forgiveness, and a willingness to take responsibility for all of our actions, whether they're by body, speech, or mind. And of course, that's for us as Buddhists, just that sense of taking on a training. We're not taking on a belief system. We're not taking on a series of magical kind of rites and rituals. We're taking on a training, and to be able to do that, it's just is necessary, helpful to be able to do that with mutual support, within a community, a communal basis. And we've been together for this 3 months of the retreat, one of the important aspects of this time, one of the reasons why it's so, say, potent or powerful, is that we live together we're not moving around, we're not changing, we're not, and we're committed to being in one place for this period. And because it's just as the, within the human condition, and within, certainly in American tradition, if you don't like something, then you go somewhere else, do something. That's why the average house in a home in America is ownership is about 5 years, I think, is average. Because people are always moving to go somewhere else. And I mean, that's how America was built. just kept on moving, until they sort of started at one ocean and ended up on another one. But the living together in a community takes effort. And this afternoon we had a a preliminary closing session, and there was a tremendous amount of gratitude and appreciation expressed on the, you know, the monastic side, the lay retreat side, and it's very, heartfelt, very real, and very appropriate, because it's there was definitely a feeling of harmony and commitment in sincerity that has been displayed through this period of 3 months, and it's to be acknowledged, recognized, and delighted in. But it's also important to recognize that it that sense of harmony and appreciation is it has causes. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't magically appear because it's a nice ideal. It's because people work at living together skillfully, and of course that's something that, as we come to the end of the retreat, then we move into a different phase of our life at Abhayagiri, and there will be some movement. There's the retreat will shift into a bit more active phase, but you know, we still have to live together, and it's important to remember the skills that we have been living by and implementing and learn and developing through these past 3 months for how to go forward and to be attentive to that. I think one of the things that you know, especially as spiritual practitioners, we do live by, we do have high ideals, quite rightly so. There's no sense setting the bar really low for yourself if you, just because it's easier. I think it's important to recognize, where do we create our frustrations? Where do we create our feeling of something's wrong, something's not right, part of it is just within ourselves, and a big part of it is within ourselves. The sense, because it's like, with 3 months, we're coming to the end of 3 months retreat, but it's something that we do all the time. Is we look and we say, what did I gain? What did I achieve? What did I attain? I came to Abhayagiri for the winter retreat, and all I got was this T-shirt sort of thing. Because that's how we measure things in our cultural perspective, but in the human perspective, we're looking at what did I get, what did I gain, what did I achieve, what did I realize, because it's so important to shift that. Respect, because that's always you're always going to come up short. That's the nature of desire. It's the nature of craving. It's the nature of self-view. Is that you're always going to come up short. You didn't quite do enough. Didn't quite, whatever it was you achieved. All of a sudden, it's disintegrating and falling apart. And I think as if anything one takes away from this retreat and one's practice, one's spiritual practice, is to rather be looking at, what did I learn, what did I relinquish, what did I give up, and as we go forward. It's that posing that question for what can I learn? What can I relinquish? What can I give up? And there's a tremendous amount of satisfaction and gratification when one starts to reflect and measure in that way. It's so much more helpful for one's kind of well-being and happiness, to be looking at things from that perspective, and practice becomes a lot more satisfying when one realizes that one can be relinquishing, one could be letting go. And that's the flavor of the Buddha's teaching, and the goal is a flavor of release, a flavor of relinquishment, being able to relinquish greed, hatred, and delusion, to relinquish suffering and discontent, dissatisfaction. A tremendous gift to oneself, and a gift to those around us, so that as we come to the end of the 3-month retreat, it's also the beginning of a new period of what we're. What we're going to be doing as a community, what we're going to be doing as individuals, and to continue to be reflecting and contemplating and putting into practice the things that we have learned, and continue to want to learn. So it's to recognize where what's the source of our discontent or our dissatisfaction, and of course you can trot out the Buddhist doctrine, it's all from because of desire, which is true, it's important to really reflect more deeply, and you know, understand how, you know, the process of the, you know, and take responsibility for the world that we are building, and that's it's when the Buddha talks about the world. I mean, when oftentimes when you know, just in common parlance, we say, you know, the world's such a confusing place, or you know, the world is so unsatisfying, or the world is full of dukkha, and but it's also recognizing that we are engaged in building that world. And the Buddha, you know, sort of at different points asked the, you know, rhetorical question, you know, the world, what is the world? And there's a couple different answers that he gives that I think are really important to be paying attention to. I mean, one is the eye is the world. The eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, the mind. This is the world. So that what we, how we sense the world around us is how we experience it. And so through sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and the thoughts and feelings that we have. That is the world we experience. It's not that the world outside or anywhere is illusory but it's more what is our experience of the world, and it's built, it's created through the sense contact. And that's another way that the Buddha talks about it, is, you know, again, the rhetorical question, the world, what is the world? And the Buddha says, that whereby one is a perceiver of the world and a conceiver of the world, that is the world. So that we, that whereby we experience the world through the senses, and then through our perceptions of memory, conditioning, preference, and then create our reactions to it. That is the world we live in. So that, and this is, we can deal, you know, say the external world of whatever is happening in the news, we don't really have that much control over. We don't have any control over it. But that which we are perceiving and conceiving in this present moment, carrying that world around with us, we can deal with that. We can work with that. We can bring kindness and compassion to that. We can bring patience and contentment to that world. We can bring wisdom and clarity to that world, and that's how we engage in our personal world. It's how we engage with the world around us, and that has a as the possibility of transformation, of real liberation, and you know, it just is realizing that you know for however, say during this 3 months of retreat, however peaceful and clear we got, whatever what we experienced, we can bring that into the our life as we go forward and build on that. Having learned from that, we can be paying attention to what we can relinquish, what we can let go of, because you know we clutter our world with so many things, and especially our moods and opinions and views. I mean, that just is a, it's a very cluttered world, and so to be able to have the opportunity to continue, that's a real blessing, and to again, to these 3 months have been a really important time, and as was expressed this afternoon, a tremendous amount of gratitude, appreciation, harmony, a lot of well-being, a lot of good feeling amongst us all. And how do we carry that through, and how can we work with that to develop the peace and clarity that is. And I'm thinking of what comes to mind is a monk who was living with Ajahn Chah, and he was he had respect for Ajahn Chah, but he was just he just found it a bit much, and he was going to go off, leave the community, and go somewhere else where he could be on his own and be in retreat. And Ajahn Chah's response was, yeah, well, you can do that. You can go back to your cave and be peaceful there. Or you can stay on here and learn how to be peaceful anywhere. And I think, and I think that's something that is the how do you say, the hope that the Buddha gives to us all is the opportunity to understand the purpose of his teachings and learn how to be peaceful anywhere. So I'll offer that for reflection and wish you all the opportunity to carry that through.
I'd like Ajahn Kirtadamo to say a few words as well.
It's a little intimidating to follow Lungpa. It's sort of like the warm-up band coming after the main the main act. Let's keep it brief with a few reflections. Yeah, as Lungpa mentioned, ending of the retreat is here, and there will be transitions happening, movement of people. Actually, a fair number of the retreat crew is going to be hanging around for a while. Some will be moving on, coming back. Some moving on and who knows when coming back. And some not moving on. So it's a bit of an unusual ending, but very nice prospect for all of us here. Many will be staying on or nearby. The monastic community will undergo shifts, some people over the next few months moving on, some people coming back. So times of shifting and changing often after this winter retreat. Back to basics was the theme for these teachings the past 3 months, and I think that's a good thing to just keep as we keep in mind as we move into the next phase, whatever that will be, not undervaluing the importance of particularly sila, virtue, the precepts, particularly if you're moving more out into the world outside the monastery for periods of time. You know, it's if you can just maintain that, if even if the mind doesn't settle easily or get involved with formal practice, that is paramount for all of us. I can remember before coming to the monastery that the primary motivation, the primary drive inside of me was, as I was kind of moving in this direction anyway, not having made a commitment yet, but moving in this direction, was just, if I can only establish myself in the eight precepts, then anything else is okay. I could die happy just with that, you know. Don't have to worry about high attainments, meditation, those kinds of things. If I can just establish myself firmly in the eight precepts, it's the basis for happiness. So just to encourage people, whether it's the eight precepts or the five precepts, to just never, ever, ever, ever lose sight of that foundation, that stability, carry you through most ups and downs that the world will present. The Buddha was asked to sum up the teaching in a, you know, just a short short phrase, and the response was, you know, don't cling to anything whatsoever. That's the fundamental aspect of his teaching, and to just keep that as we move more into engagement and move into the world of stimulation, sight, sounds, taste, the world, as Lumpa was talking about, the world of the senses, the mind, and not to get drawn into the world, cling to the body and mind with a notion of self, all the objects of mind, to try and maintain that sense of grounded awareness, bodily awareness, right here and now, so that we're not moving through the world, that the world is moving through us, the experiences of all the sense bases, the sights and sounds and tastes, tactile sensations, etc., thoughts. We're here, we're staying here, right where we are. And the world of the objects is coming through us, and we don't have to go anywhere. We don't have to go out to meet them. We know them and let them pass through our sphere of awareness. And that's so important to keep in mind, particularly moving out into more stimulating places, stimulating activities, or even here in the monastery, as more people will come as guests and visitors, we keep our sense of present moment groundedness right here, right now, right in the body, and allow everything to pass through without clinging, not clinging to anything whatsoever. Keep that as the basis for how we are in the world. A phrase from our chanting that I often just repeat over and over again is a very reassuring remembrance of that kind of base from which I try to operate as much as I can, remind myself over and over again. It's from the Mangala Sutta towards the end, that Putasa Loka Damehi Chittang Yasana Kampati Asokang Wirajang Kemang Itamanga Umutamang. Although in contact with the world, which is what we will be experiencing more of as the days open up, although in contact with the world, unshaken the mind remains. Chittang yasana kampati, unshaken the mind remains. Beyond all sorrow, spotless, secure. These are the highest blessings. So just keeping that reference point as we move into greater contact with the world, there is that potential for unshakability, security, freedom from sorrow, freedom from dukkha. And that is that's the potential for us. That's our greatest, one of the highest blessings. So just with those thoughts in mind, a lot of encouragement, again, gratitude, appreciation for everything that everyone has done to support the retreat, lay people, monastics, friends, visitors. It all works together. So I'll leave it there.
It's a strange thing, time, when time passes, and when in the middle of the winter retreat, and this is, had this experience over and over again, feeling like it's so long, it's such a long time, and then at the end, having that feeling that it wasn't very long. And so I like to think back to different experiences and review the retreat, and the how did this retreat start? And it started with the January 4th, Longpa Pasano's 50th bhikkhu birthday. That's how it started. And so now it's about 3 months later, and we're ending the retreat. So at the beginning of it, then the retreat, we look forward, and the retreat seems like it's going to be very, very long. And it is long. It's a quarter of a year. And then we might have these this feeling of determinations, aspirations, things we might want to develop or let go of during the retreat. And then through the course of the retreat, we may succeed or fail at various things. And then near the end of the retreat, it's good to reflect on what's changed at the end of it, and how do we relate to beginnings, how do we relate to endings. Sometimes I've found that I thought I hadn't really let go of anything or developed anything, but then at the end of a retreat, then I find that there was some fruits to the practice that arose. But because it was happening slowly, and sometimes we don't really maybe realize that we are slowly learning how to do this, how to live within the precepts, how to live a Dhamma life, and how to be more content, more happy, more patient, more kind. And we are learning how to do it. And then over time, we can reflect. Sometimes we need to look back and actually say, oh yeah, we did quite a bit. We did quite a bit in this retreat. And Rick asked a very good question this morning about clinging to the beautiful settings around us, nature in this place. Is that maybe unskillful? Walking down, or walking on the trail in the beautiful moonlight through the trees. And we're very blessed with a beautiful setting here at Abhayagiri. And I think we only experience things like that where we marvel at the beauty of nature and the clean air, and you know, even this tray of this forgiveness tray with the rosemary on it, and I was holding it thinking, wow, this is really smells nice, like medicine. To notice those things, we only notice those things when we're living a wholesome life, when we're keeping the precepts, when we're cultivating our mind, then we will notice what's good all around us. But if we're not cultivating the mind, if we're not practicing, we could be surrounded by goodness but not notice it. And there's like a story that illustrates this in the Buddhist cosmology, where I'll have to take some poetic license with this because it won't be exactly the story. I haven't memorized it, but it goes something like, there's two different beings, there's two different people. One of them, he's not a good person, an unwholesome person, but somehow through deceit and through impersonation or disguise, is granted entry into a certain sense sphere, heavenly realm. So one of the heavens gains entry into the heavenly realm. But when he goes to that heavenly realm, he's able to then, because he's been granted entry, but he's not actually supposed to be there. So he gets to eat all the heavenly food and see the heavenly sights and experience heavenly things, but there's not a single thing that he can enjoy. So the mind is, because the mind isn't peaceful, the mind isn't content, all the food is, none of the food gets enjoyed. None of the experiences in that heaven are enjoyed. It's just thinking up, you know, maybe they'll find me out. I got here in the wrong way. And, you know, what are they going to do if they know how I really got here? What are they going to do if I'm found out? And so the mind is agitated. And even though he is able to actually eat heavenly food and be surrounded by heavenly sights and sounds, he can't enjoy a single bit of it and ends up running away, running out of that heavenly realm. And there's a second person who is of a wholesome mind, wholesome character, who gains entry to that same heaven, but in a very natural way, because the mind was already wholesome and is able to experience exactly the same things as the first person, heavenly food, heavenly sights, heavenly sounds, and is able to fully enjoy it and partake of it. And after many, many years in that heavenly realm, this being, this entity, actually, the mind starts to gain dispassion and starts to actually see the drawback even of heavenly sensual pleasures, and ends up turning towards Dhamma practice, ends up turning towards relinquishment, letting go, and attains a stage of awakening. And so I think it's a good story for illustrating that we can be surrounded by goodness, we can be surrounded by all sorts of good things, but not actually realize what we're in, what we're a part of. We might be surrounded by good people, surrounded by good food, surrounded by all sorts of wholesomeness. But because the mind isn't wholesome, then we don't recognize it. But then when we're surrounded by goodness, surrounded by wholesomeness, and then we've been cultivating our mind, we've been practicing, making the mind wholesome and skillful, then we can recognize it, then we can really enjoy it, then we can see what we're a part of and appreciate it and develop appreciation and gratitude and make the mind even more skillful, even more wholesome. So it's good if we can recognize and enjoy the beauty around us and recognize and enjoy what we have. For myself, sometimes walking down in the morning, especially springtime around this time, it'll be cool in the morning time, walking down the trail around dawn, and we'll hear the mountain quail calling out. And for me, that's like a sound of solitude. Causes the mind to go reflect on solitude and to feel peaceful and content. The mountain quail it's not like the California quails that roam in flocks. They're also here in the monastery, or the turkeys that have been around a lot. But the mountain quails are solitary, and they usually hang out in the creek beds, and rarely do they kind of meet up with each other. It's a solitary quail. They're thinner and taller and slightly bigger than the California quails, much more elusive, but you can hear their call sometimes in the early morning, and then they have a different clucking kind of call that they do in the afternoon. But it just gives a feeling of being in solitude, being in the forest. So when we, as a forest monastery, we come into contact with these kinds of things, and all of us have had, thinking back over the retreat, we've all had periods of solitary retreats on our own, the retreats within the retreat. So all of the retreat crew, you all had a one-week retreat, and then the monastic community, we got a two-week retreat. And that's a really good time to just allow ourselves. It's an interesting reflection. It's kind of hard to actually allow ourselves to just be fully content. it's really hard to allow ourselves to do that. And why is that? What's actually blocking the mind from that? What's blocking the heart from that? What sort of obstacles are in the way of that? What sort of becoming is in the way of that? And why can't we just sit down at any time and just be really happy and content with just where we're at right now? But then being on solitary retreat, that really opens up that opportunity for us. We're fully supported. We actually, the kitchen makes food. We can come down and collect some food, go back to our dwelling place, be completely on our own, and then have the meal, sit down, and actually just see if we can enjoy our surroundings. And the body becomes comfortable, the mind becomes comfortable, and we can settle, and we don't feel like we have to move for quite some time. So with experiences like that, then we take that with us. We can recollect that. One of the qualities, it says in the teachings, that one of the qualities of, say, the deep meditative absorptions is that you can't forget it. You can't actually forget about it. You're always going to be able to recollect it. If it was just ordinary peace, ordinary contentment, you might forget about it at some point. You might forget that it happened. You might have to really try to remind yourself. But for real peace, very deep peace, very deep contentment, that's going to be hard to forget. So we'll always be able to recollect it. Those times when the mind is agitated or we feel discontent, we'll help ourselves by recollecting that, well, we did that before, that is possible. So have that in there. I know I can get back to that. So we learn how to practice. We learn these things little by little. That's what these winter retreats are for. We learn how to be more patient, more kind, more content, more happy, more able to let go of these things that tend to unsettle the mind, agitate the mind. And then we just keep going from there as we build our Dhamma practice. So I truly wish everybody well on the next stage of our journey together. And I will leave it at that this evening.